Kala Trinagutsi. Thank you for listening to Nipivot. Our theme song is by Angela Amagolik. This episode was made by me, Emily Sapa, Annie Pisukti, Jennifer May, Nancy Angilik, Tina Pisukti, William Kumagsiutiksak, and Carol Bauer. Thanks to Concordia University, Southern Quebec Inuit Association, and CKUT 90.
Phone Doc.
And this mess stinking.
When we ain't chilling up in the bricks in the chalet, we chilling out here in Montreal.
On CKUT.
Nobody do it better, dog.
90.3 FM. Gone.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
I'm just a chick trying to find my way. I know that time's so critical. I'm gonna save the world another day, cause I got a lot to learn, lots of places to see, and this is what I deserve. I wanna live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I'm only trying to find my way. Don't look at me like a criminal. You're not alone, we have got bills to pay. And though the times are critical, I'm gonna save the world another day. Cause I got myself to love, plenty of people to meet. So if I crash and burn, at least I live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Sleeping with one eye open, heavy pounding at your door and in your heart. Back and forth, standing on shaking ground. Another round.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is a minimalistic graphic designer from Montreal. She is best known for her self-published coloring books, Black Queens and Black Kings, which are filled with images of powerful people and positive affirmations that will help uplift your spirit any day. These coloring books are great for people of all ages. Her coloring books went viral on social media and gave her the opportunity to have segments on CBC, Global, and CTV, amongst many other local and international platforms. The viral post on social media also gave her the opportunity to create a book with publisher HarperCollins. Together, they released her board book, My Hair. My Hair is a perfect introduction to an array of beautiful hairstyles for tiny naturalistas in training. In addition to her work as a graphic designer, she is the founder, illustrator, and designer of her plush toy brand, Zuri André. The toy brand officially launched in January 2021 and are based on her coloring books. Along with her own work, she's also recognized for being the illustrator and designer for the Big Dreamers, the Canadian Black History Activity Book for Kids series. She is Danielle Morel Cox. Welcome back. Because thank this you. Is not the first time.
I know, right? But like,
you came on way before the pandemic. I think
I was about to say, like, you have to base time on, like, is it pre-pandemic or post-pandemic? Listen, so I'm just like, yeah, so it's been a couple years.
Listen, it's pre-pandemic era and post-pandemic era.
Yeah, no, so, it's a thing. It helped me realize when things happen, to be quite honest with you. Because the pandemic was just like a whole swirl of stuff in like one time frame.
Swirl of
like,
confusion.
Yeah,
it was a big old confusion. When we restarted the show during the pandemic, we started asking folks how they're doing. How has the last 2 years of pandemiciness been for you?
I like that word, pandemiciness. I mean, it's been like ups and downs, I think, for everyone. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a homebody. So for the most part, staying at home wasn't bad for me.
Gotcha.
Saved on gas, saved on all the fun things. So the idea of having to stay at home, at least for like the first year or so, for the most part, wasn't bad. I do have an autoimmune condition, so it also made me have to stay at home to a certain extent for the most part. So it actually wasn't that bad mental health-wise for me personally. Of course, I had moments where I'm just like, okay, it would be nice if I could go out and meet my friends or see my family.
Yeah.
But overall, I'd say it was more good than bad in the sense of staying home. But I did experience like a whole situation with the autoimmune condition where I had to have surgery on my eyes last year in 2021. So mm-hmm. I think that affected my mental health a lot more than actually having to stay at home because of the pandemic.
Right.
So yeah.
So you say you have an autoimmune condition and I follow you on social media and I really appreciate that you're very open about speaking about these things, because a lot of the times anything that is considered quote unquote bad, so mental health, physical health, you know, it's like frowned upon, especially in our community, to talk about it and to be open about it and stuff like that. And I was wondering if you could like tell us a little bit more, because there's multiple types of autoimmune conditions out
there. Oh yeah.
So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about what type of autoimmune condition you have and what it does to you.
For sure. I mean, I think going through this experience, I've realized there are more autoimmune conditions than I realized.
Yep.
Like, to start it off with, I grew up with juvenile arthritis. So I was like, when I was 10, 12 years old, I had juvenile arthritis. All throughout high school, actually. And so, like, I had a doctor's note where I didn't have to, like, do gym if, like, I was in really bad pain in my knee, because that's where the arthritis was.
Right.
Realizing later on that arthritis is also an autoimmune condition, which is, like, mind-blowing me.
Right.
But that's actually not even what I have anymore, so they say. But what I have is called sarcoidosis. And so, essentially, it's inflammation within your body. And that could be any part of your body, your organs, any organ in your body.
Okay.
For me specifically, it actually affects my skin, which, as we know, is like the largest organ.
Right.
So it affects my skin and it also affects my eyes. And specifically on my skin, it actually affects only my tattooed skin. So I have tattoos with only black ink.
Okay.
And so the sarcoidosis only affected the skin that had ink in it, which was very strange and a very weird experience all on its own.
Right.
And so with that, I took medication. I had to take like an injection like every week for it. And like I take drops for my eyes, but specifically during the pandemic, I actually experienced cataract due to the uveitis in my eye, which uveitis is inflammation in the eye. And so I was taking drops for the uveitis, and my ophthalmologist, she was very open with me from the start. Like, this all started in 2017.
Right.
And she said, you're going to form cataract sooner rather than later. And I'm like, okay, because of the drops, it does induce cataract earlier.
Okay.
And so I was like, okay, but I'm thinking like, earlier in the sense of like, generally speaking, you think cataract surgery is like in your 60s and your 70s
right,
or something.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking early is like my 40s, maybe.
Dang.
So I'm 31 now, but I experienced cataract at 30. And so that was a whole whirlwind of an experience, especially during the pandemic, right? And so, yeah, I had cataract surgery in 2021. And it was so aggressive that within like a few weeks, like one eye was blind, like literally couldn't see anything out of it.
Wow.
And the one eye that could see was struggling, like it was bad. I couldn't drive anymore. I had really bad vertigo. I spent a lot of time just in bed sleeping because there's literally nothing else I could do. Either my head was spinning or I felt like I was gonna fall or faint.
Yeah.
And then like I would walk around with my hands like fully in front of me. So think like a zombie walking. Stereotypical zombie just like pushing their hands in front of them.
The only thing you needed to do was moan.
Oh. Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, sometimes I kind of did that because I was just like crying because it was not good.
Goodness.
So that really affected my mental health for sure. I mean, yeah. I remember a specific time where, other than of course staying home, but I was like, I want to still be able to try to do as much as I can. I couldn't work. I'm a graphic designer by trade, right? So I couldn't really work.
So you need your eyes, right?
Exactly.
Your eyes.
And like generally speaking, you generally, unless you're born blind or you go through an experience that you then
become
have
blind.
Blindness,
yeah.
It's kind of like, you don't necessarily get used to it at first, of course, but like it eventually becomes like your normal.
Yeah.
But for me, it went from like seeing 1 week to like not seeing the other. Yeah. Like that's kind of how fast it went.
Wow.
So it's not like I really was able to like gradually get into the process, understand how it was going to work and stuff like that. So that was very traumatizing. Mm-hmm. And there were moments where I was like, there was one time I was in the grocery store. I'm like, I can do this. I can get groceries. Like this is an easy thing.
Yeah.
But I always been able to do. And I went into the grocery store. My partner was in the car just like waiting for me. So I'm just going to get a few things. And I had a breakdown. Right. I couldn't read the labels. I couldn't really see what I was doing. And I just started crying. And again, we're in a pandemic. So I'm wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And like mask is wet. My face is wet. Not cute. Eventually I found the Kleenex boxes, grabbed the Kleenex box and opened it inside the grocery store.
Yeah.
Of course I bought the Kleenex box.
Yeah.
It was.
That would be weird to leave it.
Yeah. Right. And then we had a new Kleenex box in the house. But yeah, so the sarcoidosis eventually, because of that, of course, I have it in my eyes. It could be uveitis. And then with the drops that I was taking for the uveitis, this is kind of just a recap because I know I kind of talk a lot. But the drops help with the uveitis essentially created the cataract. And so that, and then mixing that with the pandemic last year was intense.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that between the time that the cataract started forming aggressively and the time mm-hmm. that you had the surgery, were you able to kind of start adapting to like the loss of sight, or it was like, or you like, you know how someone who, well, you know how, no, I'm assuming someone who's going blind would have like, they have to go through like the 7 stages of grief and then they accept
right.
and then they like start learning Braille and
start
like remembering where things are in the house, where things are in the fridge and stuff like that. It's...
I mean, that's exactly what I would assume too. I'm lucky, blessed, grateful to the universe, the Lord. I'm grateful to everyone and anything.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that mine was a temporary situation.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know what I would have done or how I would be right now if it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very, very grateful that it was temporary, but it was hard too because, this all started around like March of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I was just going through the processes and everything. And then because my uveitis is so bad in the sense of the inflammation in my eye is so bad,
mm-hmm.
my ophthalmologist and the cataract surgeon, because there's two different doctors, they didn't want to have the surgeries done at the same time.
Right.
So I had one surgery for one eye. And then 2 months later, I had another surgery for the other eye.
Right.
The second surgery was actually like a week before my 31st birthday. So it all happened within 30, but
yeah.
I don't know if I even really got to like, well, that's a lie. I think after a while, I kind of was just like, okay, obviously I can't just like go take a drop and get my eyesight back. So it was a process to kind of go through it and like mentally figure things out. And then also, of course, like with my everyday life, try to figure things out. But I don't know if I ever got to the point of being 100% okay with it. I think I was always kind of irritated by it. I was always kind of annoyed, upset. Especially frustrated. Like I lost my independence. I couldn't just drive anywhere I wanted to go. Right?
Right. Yeah.
And so I had to either ask my mom or my partner to drop me places. And in the meantime, I was still selling my dolls.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like packing orders with things like really close to my eyes so I could kind of see things.
Wow.
And then like, I'd be like, hey mom, like, can you like during your lunch break, can you drop me to the post office so I could just like drop off these packages? So I don't know if I ever 100% was okay with it,
mm-hmm.
But I kind of had my moments of being like super, super low. And then I had my moments of just being okay. And mm-hmm. I had my moments of, I'm so happy this will pass. Like this too shall pass. Like
right.
the famous quote that we always hear.
Right.
Cause I was blessed enough to have something that was temporary.
Right. And do you think that the fact that you had already had discussions about your surgery and all of that having that interim between it aggressively attacking your eye and then having the surgery, it was like, I know this is going to be over, but this is really messing up my life right now.
Like, yeah. Oh, 1000%. Yeah, for sure. And like, I was really adamant about trying to have both surgeries at once.
Right.
Like having both of my eyes done at once. But like, obviously the doctors know more than I do. I'm just physically going through, but they know what's going on the inside, right? Like they see all the things.
Yeah.
And so I even thought of it too, like, because they were like, no, well, we want to see how your eye reacts. Like, because you have so much inflammation, like, your eye could just go nuts. And, like, maybe we have to adjust how we do the second surgery. So they wanted to see, which was good. It was a preventative thing, right? To see if anything were to happen once my eye goes through that trauma of the surgery.
Yeah.
They wanted to see how things would react, how things would go. And then, of course, like, you have to wait till things heal a little bit before they do the second surgery. So in the end, in the grand scheme of things, it was the best decision. But in those like 2 months, I was like, I still had the vertigo. I still couldn't drive. Even the one I could see when I couldn't, I wore an eye patch because it helped with the vertigo a little bit to keep like the eye that couldn't see kind of closed.
Right.
But in the moment, it felt like the longest 2 months of my entire life. Absolutely. In the grand scheme of things, 2 months in your life, if you're living for decades, years, is like nothing.
It's nothing. Yeah. And I saw the images on Facebook and, of the, like, you with the eye patch and everything, and I don't know, like, it was just like, oh, that's really cool. And I was like, you know, because I find like it's amazing, but it's also detrimental, because like we control social media and folks are really like careful about the images that they put up and stuff like that, and so it might give you the perception that, you know, this is something amazing or something really cool. So you don't really know the story behind it. And how many people like sit down and read the caption? I don't know. Sometimes I write captions and I'm just like, how many of y'all like, actually read this? It's like, this is
a novel, but who's actually reading it after the first line?
Exactly. And so I'm just like, to me, it was just like, at first I thought it was, you were doing like cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was one of those who didn't read the caption at first.
Yeah.
But then after like seeing multiple posts, I was like, oh, and you're talking about cataract. I'm like, oh, this is some serious stuff going on.
Yeah.
But just to show you that the eye patch, like it wasn't like an automatic cue that something was wrong. It was like, oh, this is really cool. What's going on here? You know, and because you're a graphic designer and stuff like that, my natural inclination was, oh, she's probably preparing for Comic-Con when the pandemic is done, you know, something like that.
It's true, because it all depends on, like, your own experiences, right? To see, like, what you see. Obviously, you read the caption, you know what happens.
Yeah.
But if you're just looking at the visual, depending on your experience, like, if you know of Comic-Con or you go to Comic-Con, or let's say you're into anime and comics and all that kind of stuff, then you kind of think, okay, that could be cosplay. But if someone, let's say, for instance, had a family member who just had one eye, they would think, okay, maybe she's lost an eye. Like, it all depends on your experiences that you live.
Yeah.
Of course, reading the caption obviously helps and explains things better. Absolutely. But if you're just looking at it at face value, it's really based off of your experiences, right?
Yeah. And like, I was really very surprised about, just now when you mentioned about the fact that it attacks your tattoos, because I remember you saying you kind of lamenting a bit about the fact that you can't get any more tattoos, and you had a whole series of pictures or videos where you had a filter. And you had, like, I think you had face tattoos. And I was like, yo, that's cool. Like, people don't do face tattoos. And then I read the caption. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like she can't get them. So she's living vicariously through
the filters. Through filter. I mean, I technically physically could go into a tattoo shop and get some. But it's God knows what would happen if I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd rather not take that chance. I'm not that adventurous. So,
well, you already have the tattoos. So you already know. You know, I already know what's going to happen.
It just sucks, though, because the tattoos I have, because of all the inflammation that they went through, like, there was a point where, like, they were, like, pieces of my skin were falling off. Like, it was not cute. It was very gross. Okay. I have a video on YouTube, actually, that shows more visuals.
Right.
But,
I was about to ask you, like, what what happened with the
It's funny because it all started in 2017, mm-hmm. and I thought there were two different things. So I was having really bad migraines. I had to wear sunglasses indoors, couldn't really go outside. It was really, really bad.
Wow.
And then my tattoos started to flake a little bit. And I'm like, oh crap, like what's happening with my tattoos?
It was kind of like when
your
tattoo
bit.
Would heal and starts flaking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Except the tattoos were like, at this point, some of them were like over a decade old. Like I had tattoos for a long time. So it's not like they were new.
Right.
Yes, I had some that were a little bit newer, like within a few years, but it's not like I had gotten the tattoo like a month ago. They were still there for a few years.
Yeah.
And so I thought those were two separate things that were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Later finding out after going to the hospital and then they're doing the tests, the CT scans, the MRIs, all that kind of fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then like they're after going through all that stuff and I'm like, well, my head still hurts and my eyes are still an issue. Like light sensitivity is still a really big issue. So after that, I went to ophthalmology. And then from there, the ophthalmologist that I saw there was like, I'm going to send you to a specialist in ophthalmology, who's now my current doctor, who I've been seeing since 2017.
Right.
But going through that whole process, I thought there were two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to dermatologists. I went to like a liver specialist. Like I went to so many different specialists at one point.
Wow.
Now I just mainly see my ophthalmologist. But in the process, again, I thought it was two separate things, later finding out that they're actually linked and it's all under the bracket of sarcoidosis, which is very interesting. But
Ask this before, but what's an ophthalmologist?
So there you have your optometrist, which is your eye doctor that gives you a prescription for your glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And an ophthalmologist, from my layman's term explanation of it, mm-hmm. is essentially an eye doctor, but more specialized in like the inside of the eye and what's happening in the eye and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So they don't give you prescriptions, ophthalmologists, but an optometrist does. Like if you go to a mall and you go to a glasses place and there's a doctor in there, that's the optometrist.
Right.
And then an ophthalmologist is either a doctor who does surgery in your eye, who does more intense and detailed things when it comes to the eye, but they don't give you any prescription.
So it's kind of like the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist. One can like diagnose and give prescriptions, and the other one just kind of like talks to you.
Exactly. Like the optometrist would refer you to an ophthalmologist if it's beyond their scope, essentially. Right.
Got it. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Danielle Murrell Cox, who is a minimalistic graphic designer, best known for Black Kings and Queens, also very, very known for her toy brand, Zuri and Dre. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We do have to take a musical interlude. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening has returned after several years away from Soul P. She's a minimalistic graphic designer, best known for her self-published coloring books, Black Queens and Black Kings, which are available at Indigo, because that's where I got my copy. For my child. The coloring books gave her the opportunity to work with HarperCollins, and together they released the board book, My Hair. And in addition to her work as a graphic designer, she is the founder and designer of the toy brand Zuri and Dre. Danielle Murrell Cox. I keep saying Muriel. I don't know why I'm adding letters to your name. Every time I see your name, I'm like, Muriel. Yes, that makes sense. Muriel.
Just because that's a pretty common name too, right? So it's understandable.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Before the break, we talked about we talked a lot about your health and some of the health challenges you've been going through since before pre-pandemic, in pandemic.
Yeah.
Now are we post-pandemic? Like, I don't know.
Still in pandemic? I don't know.
Has it ended? Well, I'm kind of like I'm okay with being like Japan, where they're constantly wearing masks all the time. They were wearing masks.
But that was based off of air quality, though.
I feel like, well, maybe, I don't know. I've never been to Japan, so I couldn't speak to that, but I guess so. But I felt like...
I think China also used to wear masks on a regular basis, like, pre-pandemic, too. It's either China or Japan that did it based off of air quality, because I don't think they had that great air quality with, like, all the people and all the things.
Pollution and stuff like that.
From my understanding, at least.
Well, I feel like, you know, now that we've lived through this whole pandemic, whether it's ended or not, we're still trying to figure that out. But yeah. I feel like, especially during flu season, there should be like mandatory wear your mask in public spaces. Yeah. Like if you're going on the metro, everybody should have on their mask, you know?
Especially the metro, because it's like recycled air, right?
It's recycled air and people are nasty.
Yeah.
People will sneeze and I've seen people take their mask down, pick their nose, put their finger in their mouth, and then they touch the poles and stuff like that.
Oh, God.
It's nasty for us who have to, like, take public transit.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's leave that outside for now. how did you, we're going to go back into time. How did you get into graphic design?
Yeah, so born and raised in Montreal,
mm-hmm.
And I went to Dawson College.
Okay.
And I actually applied.
Alma mater.
Right? I actually applied to the program when I graduated from high school, but I didn't get in the first time.
Okay.
And so Mama said I still had to go to college, though.
Yeah.
So I was in another program called Arts and Culture, so I was
That was my first program, too.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. Because I wanted to get into the film program and they didn't let me, so I went into arts and culture.
And then I went
to the SINCOM program.
Nice, yeah. So I was in that for a year and I applied again and I got into the graphic design program. So I graduated in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I knew in school I wanted to be a freelancer 100%, but okay. I also knew I still had to learn. So as much as you learn in school, like the real world experience is never going to beat that, right?
Exactly.
So I knew I had to work in the offices, in the real world experience, corporate before I became a freelancer. But I still did freelance on the side throughout that whole time.
Yeah.
So I had like little small projects here, little small projects there. And so worked in corporate for a few years, officially left corporate in 2017. And okay. So I left on really good terms too, because I worked at that same job even after I left as a freelancer for a couple years. Okay. So that was good. But I was also lucky because the corporate job that I was working in, it's called Stokes. So they sell kitchenware, dinnerware, all that kind of stuff. I worked there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I had such a really great experience because like my boss at the time allowed me to even go part-time before I fully quit.
Right.
So I was part-time for over a year because she knew I wanted to leave. But of course I needed to be able to like kind of just like stick my toe into full-time freelance and she allowed me to do that. So that was really great. And like the people I worked with were great too and they were very understanding. And so, yeah, fully quit in 2017. And then I've been freelancing ever since. And the actual books came about because I wanted to do side projects for myself. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that I still did my own projects.
Mm-hmm.
And working with clients and doing what they wanted to do for sure, but also still wanting to create for myself. And so it all started as like a social media fun little experiment of creating those little avatars with natural hair based off of my style, which is the minimal style.
Okay.
And at that time, I think it was like Bitmojis that were really popular.
Yeah.
And I hated the style of the artwork for Bitmojis.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to create my own and my own style.
Got it.
So I created all these faces. And then people were just like, you need to do something with it. And I was like, what? And so took it to social media, asked people what they thought. And mm-hmm. That's how the coloring book started.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some things, because this is a favorite question of mine, what are some things that you learned about mm-hmm. freelancing and the difference between freelancing and working for like a company?
It's not for everyone. Like, I think people need to be okay with...
It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's okay if you want to work a 9-to-5. I've had so many moments, even up until today, I'm just like, should I go back to a 9-to-5? Like, maybe maybe I should. And then I have another moment where someone places like a $100 order. I'm like, no, I can do this. I've got this. It's okay. Or I'll get a check from a client because I'm still doing freelance now. And I'm just like, no, I can do this. It's okay. But then sometimes like you don't always have the money for the bills you need to pay for. And it's very real.
Yeah.
So I feel like realizing it's not for everyone. So if you try it and you really can't do it, it's okay to go back to a 9-to-5.
Right.
It's very much okay. Other things I've learned too is, as you said, it's not for the faint of heart. Like it's hard and you need to have a lot of self-discipline.
Yeah.
And to say that I have that would be lying because I don't.
but you seem like you do. I mean,
to a certain extent, yes, I do.
Right.
Because I mean, I've been doing it for so long,
mm-hmm.
but the other part of me also like wakes up at 11 a.m. sometimes noon and like the day is like half done for most people, but then at the same time I go to bed at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because right. I'm like, let's say, working or whatever. So is it the healthiest? Not for everyone. I think it's the best for me though. Mm-hmm. I think it works the best for me because I know that when I worked in a 9-to-5, yes, I was still doing what I loved, which was graphic design.
Yeah,
but it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
There was always that feeling of wanting to do more. There was always that feeling of wanting to, and sometimes like a 9-to-5 like just exhausts you, especially if you have a family at home, you have a partner, you have friends, you want to be able to do stuff. Like you don't have time all the time to be doing the 9-to-5, having life, and then also try to create something for yourself.
Right.
So for me, the 9-to-5 aspect, as much as it is stable in the sense of the finances,
mm-hmm.
I realized it wasn't for me because I just felt like there was something missing. I felt like going into work every day was an actual struggle. Like it was not good. I'd still get to work on time, but like I wouldn't be, after a while, I wasn't putting my all into the work I was doing while I was there.
Yeah.
And so I realized, okay, like that kind of was the sign for me to say like, okay, this is the time for you to do the freelance you want to do. Like 100%, you have built up a certain amount of clients. It's time, but it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
It's definitely not for everyone.
Yeah. I 100% feel where you're coming from because in an ideal world, you want to do whatever brings you your highest level of enjoyment.
Yeah.
Right? And yes, you might be doing what you enjoy doing. Like myself, mm-hmm. I'm a writer. I love writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I could probably write copy for some corporate company, but
yeah.
I'm doing what I love, which is writing, but it doesn't mean that it's like bringing me my highest level of enjoyment because what I love doing is writing poetry and writing plays and writing short stories and novels and stuff like that. That's what makes me happy. You can't do that in a corporate environment. You have your deadlines and you're probably not writing all of those things.
Right.
And so I totally understand that. I had a discussion with someone who I said, you know, the 9-to-5 is, I was working a 9-to-5 at the time, but I'm like,
mm-hmm.
the 9-to-5 is not for me.
Yeah.
And they got really mad. They were like, oh, you millennials. First of all, I'm not a millennial.
Don't get that twisted.
But like, how is me saying that this doesn't make me happy? Like, you millennials are all lazy. I'm like, what does that have to do with anything?
You're doing even more work as a freelancer. If you're self-employed, freelancing, whatever you want to call it,
you're probably working 60 hours a week.
You're doing a lot more work than you do if you're a 9-to-5 because you get to have that cutoff, right? At 5 p.m., 4 p.m., whatever time you finish, like you can literally disconnect and never think of that job until 8, 9 a.m. the next day.
Yeah.
As this freelancer or someone who's self-employed, 24/7, you're thinking about what you can do, what you have to change. This client said this, okay, like mentally, when am I going to do it? It's a lot more work.
And compartmentalizing everything, right? So
yeah.
if you have a client that you're doing temporary work for, you have to compartmentalize that. You have to budget your time. You have to be like, okay, I'm going to do work for them. This is the budget that they're going to give me, $5,000, and the project lasts a month. What I've done is I've taken the $5,000, I put my per hour unit on it, and I'm like, okay, I need to do 20 hours a week for this amount of weeks, and then the deliverable is this date, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to get it done.
Yeah, the time management, all of that is so much more. Like, when I worked a 9-to-5, to say that I actually worked all day would be an absolute lie.
I tell people all the time, out of an 8-hour day, in which you have an hour break, maybe an hour and a half if you have like 2 15-minute breaks.
Yeah.
So you already, it's down to 7 hours. Let's say it's only an hour break. You're down to 7 hours. Mm-hmm. You're probably productive for 3 hours out of that time.
And that's a good day.
That's a very good day.
Very good day. I mean, there's the socializing. There's the getting up to go fill my cup and get some water, which I just happen to do so often. Like, I didn't even care to drink that much water at the time. But, like, now I'm just like, I need to drink water. But then I'm just like, yeah, water, water, water. It's the going to the bathroom. It's the passing by someone that's like, hey, talking with them for, like, the few minutes, right?
Yeah.
Like, you work so much more when you're self-employed or freelancing compared to the 9-to-5. It's crazy.
And then there's just so much time spent on the 9-to-5. Like, depending on where your job is in relation to where your home is. If you're driving, the amount of traffic that you're in, because, like, peak traffic time is between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. And so you might be in traffic for an hour. Or if you want to beat traffic, you'll wake up super early and get to work early, but then you're there like an hour before and you're just like, what am I doing? You know,
so I think with that, the pandemic was such an eye opener for so many people in corporations
because they realized administrative people as well.
Yeah, they could do the self-employed life in the sense of working from home, but still have that corporate aspect. And I know there's so many people who don't want to go back to their offices because it's just like you have the best of both worlds in that sense.
Yes.
But I feel like they also realized they were doing a lot more work when they were home compared to when they were working in the office.
Yeah.
Like my mom works from home for the place that she works for. And I think they're going back to the offices like next week. But it's been like, of course, like 2 years of working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she doesn't take her breaks when she's at home. She doesn't like, she'll just be working straight for sometimes 9 hours. And I'll have to call her and be like, can you go eat, please? Like, can you take a break?
Right.
But if you're working in an office, like, everyone's getting up and going out for lunch, or everyone's doing this at their lunch hour. So it's like, you don't feel as bad to be sitting at your desk or whatever. But when you're home, you're doing so much more work and you're kind of like zoned in, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like the pandemic kind of opened a lot of corporations' eyes, because I feel like there's so many corporations that are also like not going back to the office because they realize like, hey, this is a lot more beneficial for us.
Yeah. But I mean, I can just think off the top of my head, if they can have everybody or the majority of people working from home, they can get smaller offices.
Yeah,
they can get those.
Yeah.
They can get those like rent a offices.
Yeah.
Like, if they need to do an in-person meeting, they can just go to like one of those buildings where it's a rental and they just do that. They can cut a lot of costs that they didn't think about by making people by making people use their own computers or even providing them with laptops or what have you.
It's still cheaper.
It's cheaper than, you know, an entire floor with electricity and all that. Because even if they provide you a laptop, they ain't paying your electricity. You're the one paying for it.
Exactly. So which is also a con all on its own if we think about it. But hey, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. No, but it's like there's
so
much.
You work the 9-to-5 life, but you don't get to expense your things as if you're a self-employed freelancer, for instance, right?
No,
like
you
don't get to expense your electricity, your Wi-Fi, all that kind of stuff. So like they're winning at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But
also they don't get to expense that stuff as well, right?
That's true. But they're also not paying as much either. Like,
exactly.
Paying for a rent office for, like, let's say how big it is, it's like a few hundred dollars for, like, that time slot compared to paying thousands of dollars a month for rent, electricity, all that kind of stuff. Like, it works out. And then, especially if your employees are working more and doing more, they're getting more
productive.
Revenue
for
the same amount of time compared to working in an office and not getting as much revenue. So, yeah, you were spending on your, of course, like your utilities and stuff like that.
Yep.
But now you don't have to spend for as much utilities, but now you're getting even more revenue because your employees are working a lot more. Like, they're just winning.
They are just winning. Which is messed up because now I'm just like, oh, maybe I don't want them to win.
I know, right?
But I mean, think about it. You wake up in the morning when you, pre-pandemic, you wake up in the morning, you have to wake up a certain amount of time before work starts. If work starts at 9 o'clock, you have to wake up 2 to 3 hours before.
Yeah, depending on how you're getting there, how long it takes to get there.
All of those factors.
Yeah.
Cook your breakfast, eat, bathe, get ready, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Travel. And all, like, between waking up and traveling, you don't know how things could affect your day, right? Mm-hmm. Like somebody could cut you off in the road and just really just mess up your mental pissed. And then you're pissed off and you get to work and you're super pissed off. You don't have time to, you just have to start producing.
Yeah.
Now, post-pandemic or in pandemic, you don't have all of that. You just, you have to get up. Maybe you'll bathe. You know, if you have
maybe you'll do it during your lunch break.
Yeah, you know, if you have a call, you're like, oh, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
I'll doll myself up from like the waist up.
You know? PJs at the bottom.
PJs at the bottom. Office wear up. Right, and you don't have to take. You don't have to go through the stress of like getting ready to go to work to do all of that stuff. You don't have to go through traffic. You're just like
saving on gas too. You have to drive.
Oh, it's 8:50. Oh, I should probably get to my desk now. We have a Zoom meeting in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and then you just, and you put on your little background if you have a background, and you sit in your Zoom meeting and like, I feel like you're much more relaxed, much more ready to do everything. I don't know.
I agree.
I feel like the benefits outweigh
the cons
for being in a pandemic era and like, working especially if it's like it's not you're not working with your hands, you know what I mean, like you're not
those types of jobs you have to physically be there
like you could always have a workshop in your house, but like that's not conducive to working in a group type of a team environment.
Exactly. But I think we're also thinking this with our freelance self-employed brain too.
Artistic self-employed brain.
Yeah, because then there's some people who are just like, no, get me back into the office like yesterday.
Absolutely.
And that makes sense because not everyone thinks that way or likes that routine, right? Like they like the lack thereof. Like they like to be able to wake up at a certain time, maybe hit the gym, do whatever they have to do in the morning, get ready, get their breakfast, maybe they listen to podcasts and or like audiobooks on the way to work, whether it's in the car with your headphones on the metro or subway, whatever. So it's like that routine also is super good for some people as well, right?
Yeah. I was talking to a friend the other day and she's like she works from home, and she said to me that, you know, she's starting to get tired of working from home because when she leaves work, she's literally moving 5 feet from her desk to her couch.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's something about that for her that's just like, I might need to get like a 4.5 so that I can have my office and
that,
then I can
that
leave
is the, thing,
the
though.
Office.
That is definitely something that I've also experienced. But like, then if I take my laptop to, let's say, if it was pre-pandemic, I could take my laptop to a coffee shop.
Right.
Or I could go to a park if I really wanted to.
Right.
So you still get to be able to leave. But like if you work a 9-to-5 to a certain extent, depending on what you do, if you're working from home, you can't do that. You have to stay in that one place in your home for those 8 hours, right?
Yeah.
So at least with the freelancing, you still have some kind of
flexibility.
Flexibility and liberties and where you could be. Like I could be in Dubai, like working if I want to now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm in Thailand or Japan. But like if you work a 9-to-5 to a certain extent, you have to be at least within your city or your country, probably staying at home because you probably have like 2 or 3 monitors sometimes. Like my mom has 2 monitors, right?
Right.
And she doesn't have a laptop. So it's like,
There are pros and there are cons.
Yeah,
I'm glad that we're able to look at the pros and cons. Like sometimes people get like, oh yeah, this is super great, this is super awesome, and they don't think about, okay, well, there are consequences to every kind of action. There's what's the saying? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So at least we're able to balance things out a bit. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Danielle Murrell Cox, who is a minimalistic graphic designer from Montreal, best known for her coloring books, her self-published coloring books, Black Queens and Black Kings. So they're 2 separate coloring books. I think that needs to be specified because you might think that it's all in one, but it's 2 separate coloring books. And in January 2021, she officially launched her plush toy brand, Zuri and Dre. We do have to take a quick break and play some music, pay some bills. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Sometimes I feel like solo. Them combos got me tripping. My big homie the sniper, but I'm out here pistol whipping. Sometimes I feel like solo. Them combos got me tripping. My big homie the sniper, but I'm out here pistol whipping. Sometimes I feel like solo. I'm really sorry, Lo. Them combos got me tripping. I'm going crazy, bro. My big homie the sniper. I'm really sorry, Lo. But I'm out here pistol whipping. Pistol whipping. First I try to duplicate your habits. I tried, but now I gotta say I'm sorry, Lo. Damn, went to the brain, my favorite out of all your tactics. One shot, but not a good fit for me, though. Don't want you to think that I'm going insane, but I hate one-rounders. I'd rather see them suffer. And whenever it's time to put one to their brain, I use the pistol grip instead of snuffle. Love the blood and tears all over they fitted. Look at them. Got them begging for they big to save them. They torturous buck, slow that. Yeah, they finna get it. Give it to them. That's what they should get just for misbehaving. Triple S is still the fam, though. Those times. And Lord knows that I've been staying active. Hope you cool with it. I threw away the ammo. Cause now.
Yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Danielle Muriel Cox. She is a graphic designer who released her first book with HarperCollins called My Hair, which was as a result of her self-published book, coloring books, Black Kings and Black Queens. And she also, in January 2021, officially released her toy brand, Zuri Andrea, which she actually crowdfunded on Kickstarter. Daniel, thank you so much for being here. This has been an awesome conversation. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
Like, there's so anybody who's like thinking about freelancing and in the corporate world, getting little, I feel like little nuggets of information that I hope will inspire them for whatever
it's
they want to do.
It's also good to do both. If you want to do both, that's very much okay. It doesn't have to be just corporate or just freelance. And it's also okay to switch. Like, you realizing you're doing freelancing and it's not working.
Yeah.
It's very fine and very okay to go back to the 9-to-5.
Yeah. Or go to a 9-to-5 that fits. I find one of the things that I find is as time goes by, it's like what you're willing to do after having freelance or combine freelancing and working for someone else, whether it's corporate or whether it's something else, because not everything is corporate. I find that it's like, okay, what I'm willing to put up with over here on the side of working for someone with, I'm going to be very picky about the kind of job or the kind of business that I'll get into.
Because after a while, you kind of feel like what you like and what you don't like, right?
You learn your business boundaries.
Yeah.
So
it's I agree with that 100%. Because the things I do now, I love what I do. But if you would ask me the projects I was working on, like, let's say, again, pre-pandemic, which, as we know, was a couple of years ago, I was doing any and everything design related. If someone reached out to me and said, I want a logo, okay, great. If someone reached out to me and said, I want to do this design, like, fine. But now I'm just like, yes, I can do it, but it doesn't bring me as much joy as doing A, B, and C.
Right.
So I appreciate you reaching out, but I'll have to decline. Like, I'm a lot more okay with setting those business boundaries, as you mentioned.
Mm, that is amazing. So, Zuri Andre. Why did I pronounce it like that? Because of Black Panther. Zuri. Zuri. When I saw it, I was super excited about the name. I was like, oh, Zuri. It's from the Black Panther. The Black Panther. The powers of the Black Panther. I sleep away. Oh my God. They poor Forrest Griffin. He's been turned into a meme because of his accent. His really strange African accent. But yes, let's talk a bit more about that, because those plushies are all over, you know, and you've made different versions of the plushies.
I'm trying.
They're all over. I'm so excited for them. The first coloring book, and then My Hair came out, and Zuri Andre was created in the same kind of mix timeline.
Yeah.
So How did you come up with Zuri and Dre, and how did you come up with the names and all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a whirlwind. To start off, I never thought I'd be here, just to preface that. Like, I never thought I'd be where I am today. Originally, way before the pandemic, especially when I went full-time freelance, the whole goal was I was going to be a full-time graphic designer. I was going to have my own agency. I was going to be working with people, et cetera, et cetera. I even had a studio at one point, which I still kind of miss, but I had to let it go because of the pandemic, just because money wasn't coming in, because no one was really getting money at that time at the beginning.
Yeah.
But where I am now to where I thought I was going to be is completely different. So I just want to start there. And I'm so grateful that I am where I am, even though I never expected it to be where I am. I never thought I'd be self-publishing books. That was never something I thought I would be doing. I never thought I'd even get a book deal. Like, I'm not an author, but I am an author. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not something that I aspire to be, but like, I'm grateful to be here. And so, yeah, I did the whole avatars, the faces, in my minimal style of like, just like faces that were like, whether they were female related, male related, or just like non-binary, but faces that represented like different hair. Mm-hmm. All the faces look the same in the sense of the features. It was just the hair that changed.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do something in my style because I didn't like the Bitmojis at the time,
right?
Which were more on like Snapchat and stuff like that. But from there, I was posting like each one, kind of like, because Instagram kind of became my portfolio and became a place for me to share my work other than my website.
Yeah.
And so I'd post the faces. I get a lot of feedback or people are like, oh, that's me, or that's me, or that looks like Aunt this, or that looks my cousin this, or my little girl, my little boy looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, people were like, you need to do more. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know what to do. So then I would ask questions online and coloring books came about. So because I have the experience as a graphic designer, creating books, creating layouts and stuff like that, the process of creating the book wasn't hard. Like, that part was easy because I do have that experience.
Yeah.
I worked with a printer here in Montreal that I actually used to work with when I worked at Stokes in corporate. I kind of continued that relationship and I've been working with them ever since.
Yeah.
And so I worked with a printer here, and then Black Queens came out first, Black Kings came out, and I realized I wasn't done. Like, there was, I loved the process and the idea of creating products from those two experiences. I was like, okay, what else can I do? So piggybacking on those same books, at one point I wanted to do like vinyl figurines. So kind of like the Funko Pop style type of figurines.
What's that?
So like, you know, Funko Pop, they have like little tiny figurines. They're vinyl and they normally represent like either Disney characters or movie characters or something like that.
Like the Marvel, like the very big head and almost same proportion body. Okay, yes.
Yeah. So that's a brand called Funko Pop, but there are of course like other figurines. But originally that was the plan for Zuri and Dre. Before I even knew what their name was, that was the plan.
Right.
And then I realized it was way too expensive to get samples. It was about like $700 just for the sample. And that's US dollars, not Canadian.
Wow.
So, which makes sense because they have to create like the metal molds to be able to create the face and the body and all that kind of stuff and use the material. So like, I get it, but I also couldn't pay for it at the time.
Mm.
So the next best thing actually came plushies. So plushies weren't actually the original concept, but they were just the cheaper sample. So the sample for them was about $200 or $250 each US. Compared to 700 something US, it was a lot better. So
700 something US each.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Each. Yeah. And so I did one at a time. I didn't do both at the same time, but I did one at a time. So Zuri came first.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up being really just like the mini me. Like, I wanted to make sure she had a darker complexion because I have a darker complexion.
Mm-hmm.
I have locks now, like dreadlocks. I have locks now, but she has like the two puffs, which is something that I feel like
very typical.
Every person who had a fro, whether male, female, whatever, has done the two puffs. So that was something that we could all relate to.
Yeah.
But she was first. And the process was exciting because it was like, it went from something I created on the computer or sketches to now a physical item in my hand. And it was the most rewarding thing in the world.
Yeah.
Eventually Dre came along. And when I first had them, I didn't have names for them.
Okay.
So what I did is, again, I went onto social media because I did have a page for the coloring books called Black Coloring Books, which I still have.
Right.
So on that page is kind of when I introduced the dolls and everything. And I reached out to people, people who were following me, and said, like, what would you name them?
Mm-hmm.
People commented their different names. From there, I picked two names per doll that I liked, went on to Instagram stories, made a poll, and people picked which name out of the two that they liked. And that's how Zuri and Jay were born. So Zuri and Jay were actually the customer's choice. Wow. I did not name them in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Yeah.
It was people's choice.
People's choice, for sure. Which is, I think, such a fun process, too, because, like, people feel like they're involved and included, not feel like they actually were, like, literally. Mm-hmm. And so since then, I've launched the dolls. I've ordered two batches of the dolls. But, of course, because of the pandemic, they officially were supposed to come out in 2020. But, right. Of course, everything was going on and things were delayed. By the time I actually got them was in January 2021.
Right.
And so then I ordered another batch mid to late 2021. And I thought I was going to get that in time for Christmas. Nope. Got them this year, 2022, in January again.
Were they coming from the States?
They're coming from Asia. So they're manufactured in Asia, yeah. The company is based in the States, but their manufacturing is done in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
If not, the dolls would be about $100 each, and I want to be able to make them affordable to, like, every class, right? Yeah. Like, not just middle class, lower class, upper class, like, every class. Yeah. And so,
They are very good quality. Like, you're getting quality for the money that you're spending. Like, it's not like some other toys where it's just kind of
like a cheaper material.
Yeah, because your pricing, if I remember correctly, it's around the $20-$25 range.
Yeah, so $24.95.
There you go.
Yeah.
On the nose. So it's like you're getting a good quality, a nice size toy.
Yeah, a lot of people are surprised at how big they are when they get them. They think they're a lot smaller than they are, which is also makes me happy too. Because, of course, I don't have a physical store, so everything's done online. So as much as I put as many details as I can in the sense of measurements and materials and
there's
all that kind of stuff.
There's a huge trust that has to happen on the part of the client.
So much trust, yeah. And you can't really tell what they look like physically in front of you in the sense of size, because yes, I can show myself holding it, but you don't know how big my hand is or the perspective of the camera compared to how close I am to it. So people are always surprised that they're bigger than they thought when they get them.
One thing that I've been really appreciative of is that you seem to be very intentional of having a balance between male and female representation. Like, mm-hmm. you did the Black Queens, and then you did the Black Kings. You mm-hmm. did Zuri, and then you did Dre. Like, how did that factor into your thought process when you started creating your all of the different material that you created?
Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest with you, going into this, I didn't really know much on whether I should do Queens, Kings, etc. I started with Queens just for the sake of people saying you need to make a book.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually didn't think I was going to do a Black Kings, but it was based off of people reaching out to say, like, I have a son and he needs to be able to see himself. And I was like, that makes so much sense.
Yep.
Like, I get that.
Yeah.
Now to say, do my coloring books like sell equally in the sense of as many Kings as many Queens? No. Generally speaking, for the most part, it's mainly the Queens books that get sold the most.
Right.
Especially for the dolls. Like the dolls, it's more the Zuri's that get sold than the Dre's.
Yeah.
But I still wanted to make sure, like, after hearing the feedback and realizing, like, yeah, like, I'm not the only one who needs to be represented. Our little boys need to be represented, too.
Mm.
Realizing that, like, after that and getting the feedback and stuff like that, that, yeah, I needed to be able to have... Sorry, my cat is, like, crying, but... I needed to be able to have that equal representation. And even my next doll is actually going to be non-binary.
Okay.
So that's something I'm really excited about. I don't have personal experience with being non-binary, but I know that that's something that people need to be able to identify with, especially if they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that whole process, so I'm going to have the people like who follow me, like give their opinions on names, but I don't want them to be necessary stereotypical girl names or stereotypical guy names. I want them to be like, let's say like Star or something that's just like based off of an object, for instance, versus a feminine or masculine type of name. So at first I wasn't sure if I should have created Kings, but then based off of the feedback, I definitely realized I should.
Yeah.
And then after that, it wasn't even a thought to say, like, I'm only going to do a girl doll or I'm only going to do a boy doll.
Mm-hmm.
After Kings, I realized I need to have a doll that represents both books, for sure.
Yeah. I kind of can resonate with that feedback because I had a show that I did called The Phenomenal Five. And I did it for 2 years. I did two in 1 year and then a big one the following year where... So it was two one-offs, and then there was like a five-series show. And a lot of the things was like, when are we going to have the Phenomenal Men? And when I was doing promo for it, there was a Blackspo a few years back. I believe it was early 2016. I was doing promo for the show, and so I dabble in graphic design. I'm not the best graphic designer by by any means, but you know, if I need to sit down in front of Photoshop, you know, I can do what I do. And cool. Like, in order to promote the Phenomenal Five, I did a lot of images with women and girls, and there was an image of a beautiful image of a black girl in it, and it said something to the extent of every black girl's dreams becomes a woman with like aspirations or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we were just selling them like for like $5 per card or whatever. And I had mothers come up to me and be like, "So where are the boys?" Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I didn't think about that at all, because I was just thinking about promoting this show with black women.
Yeah.
But, and over the years, I've just become watching social, I'm very active on social media, and I just realized that, like, there's an emphasis on women, which is good, because I'm very cognizant of the fact that, you know, women have been very much oppressed. Black women especially have been... Yeah. You know, really, really, like, it's amplified in terms of the oppression and the lack of representation and just the microaggression and the violence that black women experience on a regular basis. But I'm also very cognizant of, like, people are not paying attention to the black boys, which have been affected by the same thing in different ways.
Yeah, so, like, I've noticed a lot of your poetry about black men, which I really do appreciate, like, every time you post about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And those Dear Black Man posts, like, you can remove the man and put any gender you want in there, and it still applies. You know, like, you can degender it, and it's like, it really applies to everybody, because the intention is, like, yes, I'm